You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Hello and welcome everybody on a blustery afternoon in Brussels. We are here to discuss digital skills and how they can be used to help create a growth engine for Europe. There's no question that we need a growth engine. You all know what's ahead of us at the moment. We are in competitive pressures with other parts of the world. We have high levels of unemployment and even higher amongst young people. We have a long-term economic crisis that's proving hard for us to move out of. So these challenges are ahead of Europe. And both the institutions and policymakers, businesses and other communities are aware that we need to do something to fix it. And digital skills might be a way forward. We're very much hoping that as the EU committed themselves back in 2010 to become the most innovative, dynamic, knowledge-driven economy in the world, we're now in 2016. How far have we got towards that target? So we've had this long-term vision that using knowledge and innovation will help Europe drive itself forward. But today we're going to explore more about how far we've come. Just to let you know what's been happening this morning, while you were all at your offices and desks downstairs, we've had an incredibly buzzy morning. Entrepreneurs from across Europe who've learned how to use digital skills to grow their businesses came together to explore what were their challenges, what were their successes, and what needs to happen now. I hope you've all picked up a small little red brochure on your chairs that introduces some of these amazing small businesses. The variety and diversity of ideas and ways forward is really quite inspiring. And I hope you'll have an opportunity to visit the exhibition outside and to interact with some of the entrepreneurs who've been brought here today. So some of them will be, those ideas will be brought into our conversation today, and that will be my job as a moderator to make sure their messages are brought forward. Just to give you a quick introduction to how this is going to work, we are going to have an opening statement from Matt Britton from Google, who'll describe some of the activities they've been doing in launching digital skills in Europe. Then we'll also have a panel discussion, but there are two moments when I'm going to be coming to you. You will have found on your chairs pens and blue cards. This is because at different moments I'm going to ask you questions and invite you to discuss with your neighbour and then share the results with us. This is part of our process today to generate ideas. It's a very large brainstorming because we recognise everyone in this room has a role to play in enhancing the digital skill base in Europe. So that's how this is going to play out. Let me just introduce myself as I welcome you. My name is Tamsin Rose, and I'm a non-resident fellow at Friends of Europe, a partner for this event. So having set the scene for you, looking at where digital skills can make a difference in helping Europe to grow itself out of the position it's in now and future-proof its economy, let's start by looking at a short video that the team at Google have prepared to give us some insight into what they've been doing.
This is Osvaldo, Anya, and Jonathan. They are small business owners, and like many other SMEs in Europe, they want to grow. For them to do so, learning how to build an effective website and use tools like social media, digital advertising, and e-commerce is critical. But there are many out there who don't know how to use these tools to boost their chances of success.
I didn't have any digital knowledge with respect to building a website, with respect to advertising that website, or any of that.
So we asked ourselves, how could we help provide them with the right digital skills? The answer? take the knowledge to them. Through hundreds of face-to-face workshops in city centres, universities, and even on-site in small businesses themselves. And with a new online training platform that made digital skills accessible, personal, and easy to learn, we started putting these tools into the hands of hundreds of thousands of people throughout Europe. People like Jonathan, Anya, and Osvaldo.
Grazie soprattutto al programma di Google Eccellenza in Digitale, sono riuscito ad acquisire delle competenze che mi servono quotidianamente.
Zdobyłam ogromną wiedzę dotyczącą tego, jak sprzedawać w internecie.
It was astonishingly good, really. The minute I walked out of there, I felt confident we found a solution.
And there are many more stories like these. Stories of Europeans who are growing their digital knowledge, their prospects, and the economies around them.
Ad oggi, un anno di distanza dalla partecipazione al programma, abbiamo triplicato le visite sulla nostra piattaforma.
A teraz przygotowujemy się już do sprzedaży szumisiów w Chinach i Rosji, które są ogromnymi rynkami.
At that particular point when I went to the Google Digital Garage, I was on the verge of making redundancies and we could have lost the business. To have 8 staff now and we'll be taking on at least another 5 or 6 this year. It's fantastic and that's the power of digital.
So that gave you some insight into the types of businesses that were being helped with digital skills. And as you saw there, real businesses in the real world. This isn't just about creating virtual realities. This is diverse businesses serving customers and reaching out to new global customers using the digital skill base that they've learned. So now I'd like to introduce Matt Britton, the President for EMEA Business and Operations at Google, to come and tell us a little bit more about the pledge they made and their experience that they've had over the last 12 months. Matt.
Thank you. What a remarkable event to be starting an event in Brussels with two British people. I'm proud to be doing that, so thank you very much this week of all weeks. Thank you all for coming. Before I start, I wanted to just ask you a couple of questions, which I hope will underscore why we're here today, if you wouldn't mind answering a couple of questions. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you just raise your hand and say yes if you have a connected device? Yes? Okay. Raise your hand and say yes, yes, if you have two connected devices on you. Okay. Raise your hand and say yes, 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 if you have three. Four? Sir, has four over there. Anybody with five? Okay. So my point is that we've probably got an average of 2.5, 2.7 connected devices per person in the room. William Gibson said famously that the future is here already, it's just not yet evenly distributed. And there are 2.7 billion people now connected around the world, 2.7 billion. But that means it's still early morning on the web because most people are not yet connected. And between now and 2020, the internet population will double. This is a pace of change the like of which we have never seen before, and one of the reasons that digital skills are so important for every business in Europe is that every consumer is a digital consumer and the number of people you can reach is going to double. That's why this is so important and that's why I'm so excited to be here with all of you today. I want to single out a couple of people as I talk to illustrate what's going on here. So Daniel Haglager I was talking to earlier. Daniel's here somewhere. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel. Hi. How are you? So I was saying, Daniel, say hi to us. So are you here? There he is. Thank you, Daniel. He's at the back there. Go and see him outside in a second. So Daniel is the founder of a German interior design inspiration website service called Makeke. It's about helping you think about your style at home and bringing together products from all kinds of different places so that you can think about your interior design style at home. And like many people, he had got to the stage of having an online presence, but wasn't seeing the number of people coming to him. You know, you've got to build an online shop, a shop window, but you also need to be on the busy streets, and he wasn't on the busy streets. And in Germany, we had launched a program called Weltweit Wachsen, which is about helping the incredibly enterprising German Mittelstand to be as good at export online as Germany is good at export in the physical world. Germany is the world champion of export, but digitally a bit off the pace. And after Weltweit Wachsen, he was able to go and build his first AdWords campaign, which is about helping consumers connect with that shop front and grow the business 200%, I think, within 4 weeks in terms of sales growth, and plenty more to come. So it's just one example of the kind of thing that is possible here. So Daniel's story is by far not unique. You know, in here, you've got a small selection of people who are all here today who really understand the frontline realities of being entrepreneurs in Europe today and how digital skills can help. We could have chosen from millions of small businesses, hundreds and hundreds of thousands across the region, across Europe and across the world who are doing this every day. And that's why it's so vital. It's not just, as Tamsin said, it's not just about technology businesses. These are everyday businesses doing everyday things. Every business is a digital business. Every business can think about global demand from the moment they start. That's very different from the old world that we're in. At Google, we try to build products and services that work for everyone, that work as well for the poorest person as they do for the president. And this business revolution is also for everyone, for every business, large or small, whatever the sector, your consumers are connected, and so should you be. Now, a year ago, I came to Brussels, and we were in this room. A few of you were here, I recognise, and we made a pledge. We had seen the EU's Commission's work that suggested there was a skill gap. We'd seen the EU Commission report that said that half the population in Europe is not properly digitally skilled, that 90% of jobs would require some level of digital skills, and that potentially 900,000 jobs would go unfilled over the next 4 years as a result of this skills gap. And yet, at Google, we employ over 11,000 people across Europe. Most of us are Europeans and care passionately about Europe being successful in this world. And so we decided it was time for us to do something about it. So on this stage, we promised that we would aim high and aim to train 1 million Europeans in digital skills by the end of 2016. Now, at Google, we tend to set high targets that we don't know quite how we're going to achieve on the basis that it gets people excited and thinking hard and entrepreneurially about how to do that. And we have been blown away by the demand for those digital skills, by the kind of impact that people are having who've been through those trainings, some of the stories you are already hearing here. And also we've learned a lot in that process, and I'm going to share a little bit more of that with you. And this morning, as Tamsin mentioned, we've heard from lots of the entrepreneurs here about what's working, what they need more of, how politicians and policymakers and companies like ours can help them more. And I think it's really important. And thank you to all of you who've travelled here as entrepreneurs to Brussels to let the policymakers and politicians hear directly from you. Some of us have the privilege of being asked to come to Brussels to explain ourselves from time to time, but you don't. And actually, the digital revolution is not so much about us. You might think the technology companies that are everyday names are the ones that are driving the revolution, but we know it's you. You are the people who are creating disproportionately the jobs, the growth, the exports and the prosperity. And you're the champions of this revolution. And we're just very privileged to be able to bring you together with some of the policymakers so they can hear from your experiences. So what have we done so far? Well, as you saw in the video, we've set up programs across Europe that are about helping to equip individuals with the digital skills that they need to grow business. And from the outset, what we did was we tried to focus on building things that were as locally relevant as possible. So, for example, I mentioned Germany, the worldwide champion of export, but small businesses and the Mittelstand were not exporting as much as they could. So we gave birth to Weltweit Wachstum. And in all of these things, it's not just Google. These things are working best when they're in partnership. This is in partnership with Commerzbank, with DHL and the University of Leipzig. And it was all about helping those businesses find the export markets that were available to them and get them exporting. In Italy, two problems. Firstly, there's a whole raft of amazing small and medium-sized businesses that are manufacturing. Vineyards, cheesemakers, leather goods, furniture design. But they weren't using the web to promote and sell their brands and their products and services. That's one area of concern. The second area of concern was too few young people who were really being trained in the digital skills that could make them productive and to grow their careers. So we created Crescere in Digitale. Apologies for the accent. Crescere in Digitale, which is a collaboration between the Italian Ministry of Labour and Union Camere, which is the Chamber of Commerce. And with some European funding, we were able to do two things. One, help train those young people with digital skills. And secondly, help fund those people to be hired as interns in the companies that needed those skills to help them grow and export. It's a brilliant bringing together of two problems and the opportunity to solve them by working in partnership. And really proud of that and seeing some great results from that. But go to the UK. We have a bit of a divide in the UK. Various divides at the moment. A divide between the capital city, London, where there's a lot more digital skills and savviness, and the rest of the country where we have much less consistency, I guess. So, as you saw in the video, that was Jonathan talking about Digital Garage in the UK, which is about helping businesses understand how to make the most of the web. Independent Work has found that 90% of people who've gone to digital garages so far have totally changed the way they promote their business. Around 70% have seen really positive results at this stage as well, just like Jonathan was talking about in the video there. So we know that the training can make a difference for business and for individuals. If I go to Spain, I mean, one of the most troubled economies in terms of youth unemployment, and our focus there was how can we help provide skills for those people that can bring them into careers and actually bring some economic growth to Spain. So we set up Activarte, which was all about getting young people those skills. And Tano Lopez is here, and you'll hear from him on the panel shortly. He has a successful business, which is advising students in Spain how to get access to scholarships to study abroad. That's the kind of thing that's possible with this technology, and it's great to hear his story as well. So each country there has got its own specific set of challenges, and trying to bring together the right partners with digital skills has really shown us some lessons and helped us to see really what's possible here. And I'd also say it's easy to be a pessimist. You sit in Europe and you look at the revolution going on in China, you look at the US tech companies, and you think, well, you know, we're off the pace. And I would say I'm an optimist. And I spend my time in Europe and I spend my time in the digital agenda, and I'm an optimist about Europe. And I think there's never been a better time to be an entrepreneur in Europe than now. Genuinely, there's never been a better time to be an entrepreneur in Europe than now, for the reason that we did at the beginning, this huge change in the number of people you can reach. All of those people want access to brands, products, services, culture, content that we're great at creating and have a huge history in doing so. We're also not as far behind the US as you might think. For example, in startups, we've got a hotbed of innovation and developers here. Five of the top-selling games on Google Play, which is our store on Android for those who are using Apple devices, five of the top-selling games on Android come from European developers. Angry Birds and Candy Crush from Rovio and King.com, for example. We have BlaBlaCar, Skyscanner, SoundCloud, some names you might have heard of in terms of technology startups in Europe. And we also have some of the people here today who are on the technology side of entrepreneurship. I was talking to Severin Payet and to Camille Léage from Edging, which is a DJ app that I downloaded and became a DJ this week. If you haven't downloaded Edging, it's fantastic fun. This is an app for music lovers that now has 60 million users in 180 countries. 60 million users across a range of apps for the music lover. Brilliant stuff, and you can mix your own tunes. Or Sonka Buladik from IAM, which is an amazing photography platform. There's, I think, now 18 million photographers who are on there who are sharing their work, learning how to be better photographers, and actually making money from their photography. An amazing community, again, something that was never possible without digital. And actually, Android, which is our operating system for mobile phones, has been estimated to have helped to create a total of 1.2 million jobs in Europe. And we've paid out over $7 billion to apps developers through that. So it's a whole new toolkit for reaching consumers on their phones where they are with apps that they're going to love. But there's a lot more to do in Europe if we're going to be successful in the digital world. And obviously we need a digital single market, one set of rules that means that you can operate across 500 million consumers. I think one of the reasons that, you know, you've seen the first wave of technology companies that become globally successful coming out of the US is you think about national success as a startup in the US in technology, that's 300 million people. That's globally relevant scale. In Europe, smaller countries, we don't get to that scale, but with a digital single market covering 500 million in a frictionless way for a digitally powered business, then you've got a different scale to play with, and I think that's really important. In Europe, we need to be open, we need to look up, and we need to look out, and we need to look forward at this opportunity that's coming towards us. It's right that we are hearing voices that are from the past industries thinking about how do we protect and grow what we have already. But it's also right that we hear voices from entrepreneurs such as those in the room today who can see to look out, look up, look forward opportunity too. We need to have a positive agenda that encourages people to use the best tools available, whether they come from Google or from China or from Poland. These tools are hugely powerful for economic growth. And we've heard those messages loud and clear from our startups this morning. A digital single market reform is estimated could raise GDP in Europe by 4% by 2020. That's a huge amount given the kind of growth rates we're looking at the moment. That's 415 billion euros of additional growth. That is worth having for sure. So we've been listening to SMEs talking about the barriers that they face, their growth plans, what they need to do more of, and I hope that you're going to have the chance to share your ideas and hear more from them. But let me give you a bit of an update on where we are and what more we can do. As I said, we made this bold pledge last year, so it's probably time to report back to you on how we're getting on. We said train 1 million Europeans in digital skills by the end of 2016, and we're kind of around the halfway mark. We've already trained 1 million Europeans in digital skills, already trained 1 million. We were blown away by the demand, and as I said, some of the stories of impact and the lessons that we've learned. And our online training platform is now available in 24 European markets. So we brought the best modules together from those lessons learned, made it available in lots of different markets. There are a huge range of topics that you can go into, from the technical to the business and marketing side to analytics and so on. And you can access those in multiple different languages and different countries. So 24 different markets now, and we're looking to bring this program to more people than ever before. And we're extending the program because we think that more needs to be done to help Europeans succeed in the digital world. And as I said, this is for everyone, and we want to make it accessible to everyone. It's the first thing, make the platform accessible. Second thing is, as I say, we like a bold target, and we were blown away by how quickly people responded in respect of the pledge to train 1 million. So we're going to double that pledge. We're going to aim to train 2 million people, another 1 million people. We're going to renew our commitment to the Grand Coalition for Digital Jobs and to continue to play our part alongside you and partners in this huge opportunity for Europe. Because businesses like those here today are the future of Europe. Every business is a digital business because every consumer is a digital consumer. And small businesses can be global businesses. When I grew up, it was only the big multinationals that could access global sales, global marketing, global distribution. Only the biggest businesses in the world have access to the best technology. That's completely turned on its head today. We've got entrepreneurs here who've started businesses using the world's best technology, accessing demand all around the world from a smartphone sitting under the stairs in their house. That's a completely different world to operate in. And that's why I'm fond of calling the people that are here today and many of the businesses that we work with the micro multinationals, because they can access everything the multinationals can do, but they have control, they have agility, they have a real direct connection to their consumers. So at Google, we're really proud of the role that we're able to play here in supporting all of those businesses and entrepreneurs and being an engine for growth for them and for Europe. And by training people and businesses, investing directly also in startups here and encouraging others to invest alongside us. And also, we haven't talked so much about this, but supporting people like content creators in video and apps, artists and writers, developers, anybody really with a passion and a will to connect with the world using this new technology. And the success of all of those individuals, large and small, has inspired us to do more and help many more Europeans over the coming months. This is too big an opportunity for Europe to miss. I hope you can see we're passionate about this. When you talk to the entrepreneurs in the room, you'll really see the passion come through. We're here to help. Thank you.
Okay.
Matt, if you could just stay for a moment. Really interesting messages that you heard, and the point that I picked up, there has never been a better time to be an entrepreneur. And your example of the 1 million people that you've trained shows that there's no shortage of ideas out there. That's really very evident from what's coming up there. If the barriers have never been lower to entering entrepreneurship, and you mentioned you've been in 24 markets and you're now rolling out to other markets, do you get a sense in the different countries you've worked in? You've described how you specialised in the UK, Germany, Spain. You partnered up in different ways because you found there were different barriers. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the challenges going to the other markets and how you respond to the local needs?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to some people representing some of the Central and European markets earlier, and when you look at the sort of the data there, what it suggests is on average sort of 60% of European citizens feel somewhat comfortable with digital. In some of those countries, we're talking about 20%. So they're lower down the sort of digital comfort zone, and so there's more of an opportunity to help them with the basics and confidence. I also think there's a big opportunity for those who are here from the media to play by shining a spotlight on success stories. So one of the ways in which you decide to jump in to this opportunity is by seeing other people like you who are making a go of it, who aren't technical, who, you know, you wouldn't think of being a digital entrepreneur. But as I say, it's our job at Google and other technology companies to make our tools as simple as possible to operate with, to be able to translate content instantly without thinking about it, to be able to speak to your phone and have it answer back to you, make the technology as easy as possible. But then I think role models play a great role here as well. So that's one of the reasons I think we're so keen to sort of show what people are doing and show that people like you can do this.
And just to get a sense, once people have graduated from their first digital skills and have become got a thirst for the knowledge, they see how digital can make an impact, do they come back for a second round? Could you see this being a kind of contributing to the broader lifelong learning path?
I really hope so. I mean, I think one of the things I didn't emphasize is that entrepreneurs can be any age, any size or shape or nationality. And you'll see that from... this is going to sound negative. You'll see that from the beautiful people that represent the entrepreneurs from across Europe here. And, you know, we're not looking to provide the only source of digital training. One of the things that's great is when people start and they're inspired by one of these courses and they go off and become an expert coder using one of the many great resources that are out there as well. But I think by putting together a package that sort of Google endorses, people know that there's at least a quality place to start. And I also think, you know, the education system can play a role here, but the world's changing so fast. So fast that actually you need to be keeping yourself up to speed all the time. And part of the way to do that is by doing. So actually we want you to be able to learn on the job. And one of the great things about digital is you can test and learn and test and learn every day, by the minute actually, if you want to. So I think that's a new kind of skill for people to build.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you.
For this intervention. Now, as promised, we're turning the spotlight back to you in the audience. I'd like you to pick up the little blue cards that are seated on your armchairs next to you. And I'd like you to reflect for a moment, based on what you've just heard and maybe your own experience, what do you think are the challenges? What stops businesses from going online and growing their companies and contributing to growth? What are the barriers and challenges? So I'd like you to just jot down a few things. And then perhaps you could share them with your neighbour. So there'll be 2 minutes for you to think, what are some of the challenges? What stops businesses from taking that step, using digital tools to grow and enhance and reach new markets? We've seen how it's possible and how transformative it can be for different businesses. So what's stopping people? There's no shortage of ideas and opportunities. Once you've written things down, feel free to show them to your neighbour, share with them. Have you got the same thing that you've written down? Is there anything a surprise? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen. Well... lots of buzz in the room, lots of noise. So I don't know if that's because you've identified lots and lots of barriers or that you were so inspired you really got going. But who would like to share something with us? What did you hear? Was it the same issues? Did you both identify? Yes, we'll be handing a microphone to you.
I'm just talking here and we've come up with the same thing really, and that's, well, two things, and that's the fear of the unknown, not really knowing what's there. There's a lot of companies out there that really fear the internet. You know, yeah. The digital generation is still very, very young. The ones that have been brought up with it, people like myself, really, we're just sort of coming into it quite late. So there's a big fear there, I think, in businesses.
Yeah.
And also just really finding those solutions. You know, we stand this wonderful growth engine, but if you ask the man in the street, does he know about the growth engine? You know, that's, I think, is the big thing, getting that knowledge out there.
Okay, thank you. Overcoming the fear. You know, when I left home to go to university, my mother gave me a book that she said it would set me up for life. It said, feel the fear and do it anyway. So this is a message. You know, if you've got an idea for a business, then, you know, entering the internet, if you don't feel comfortable with it, is a big step. Thank you. Anyone else, what do people want to share? What do you think were the barriers that stop businesses from going online and growing their businesses in the environment? Yes, we have a hand up there. A microphone will come to you.
Thank you. I'm Hervik from Austria. I totally do agree that the most important thing is to act and to do things as entrepreneur. But what may hinder us from growing in the future, I think, is getting financial resources, especially the banking system. When I'm talking to my neighborhood, to colleagues from other businesses, is that the banking system is under so much pressure because they are facing more and more regulations, and they are not willing to support small businesses on the scale they did before, and they are not willing to get high risks. And this will make it difficult for us to grow in the future.
Okay, thank you. So, I mean, if you do take the step, you feel the fear and do it anyway, you go online, you get customers, you need to get supplies, get your products out there. If the money is not flowing, the credit facilities, then your growth is stopped. Thank you for that. Anyone else? Yes.
I would like to add something on the financial issue. Maybe something can be done on taxes, to have some lower taxes on the first income for e-business, something like that. That doesn't cost anything, and it can generate new business.
Okay, I mean, these are valuable messages to the policymakers and to the panel I'll be inviting up in a few minutes to talk about this idea that helping people get online, but once they do and they start to grow, they need the preconditions there, they need credit, and they may need some special tax breaks to get things going, to get them so they become the future big multinationals. One other input from the audience. Anyone want to share something? Anything else? Yes.
I'm Trisha Cusden from the UK, and I run a business called Look Fabulous Forever, and I'm probably the oldest person in the room. But my point is that we had three iterations of our website, and the middle one nearly broke us. And we'd love some kind of accreditation, kite marking, benchmarking, some kind of way that when you're ignorant of what you're buying could be shown to be worth the money. So we wasted money and we nearly went out of business. And it's like the Wild West, and there is a lot of cowboys out there and you don't know what you're buying.
Thank you. That is very helpful insight. And I think this is something we would ask our panel to speak about, because someone on the panel is from the European Parliament responsible for the Committee on Consumers. So looking at the double aspect of both, yes, there's lots of opportunity out there, but making sure we've got the protections and the support in place so that if you do gamble everything on a website and doing it, you don't end up in a terrible situation. So thank you for that audience participation. And now I would like to invite our panelists to come and join me. So if you'd like to come up here, I have Maxim Chiruti from Business Europe, Catherine Steiler from the European Parliament, and as I mentioned, particularly the IMCO Committee, which is the Internal Market and Consumers Committee. I have Tano Lopez, who is one of the entrepreneurs who will have a chance to tell us about some of his activities that he's been going on. We have Maeva Bessis, who is an entrepreneur from France and who has moved from the digital. I think she'll be telling us about how she's taking her business from online to the real world.
Hello.
And finally, we have from the cabinet of the relevant commissioner, we have, and I hope that I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Tomasz Huzak. Welcome. So I'm going to give each of you an opportunity for a first opening statement, and then we'll have a debate and exchange with the audience, and I'll come and join you. Mm-hmm. So if I could start at that side. Maxime, from your point of view.
Great, thank you very much. And first of all, thanks for Google organizing such a very interesting event where all the people in Europe who are really trying to advance this process are joining forces, and I think we need to be all working together. So Business Europe, that I'm representing here as Social Affairs Director, is of course very committed to promote the digitalization of our economies, and we see great opportunities in that. It's about our competitiveness, and the inputs of skills in that process will be very important. I'm dealing with social affairs. As part of that, of course, I'm interested in the education and training provision. I'll come back to that in a moment. But I'd like perhaps to organize what I'm going to tell you as introduction in a few key words. The first is adaptation is central. And I think people in Europe will need more and more the adaptation skills because it's about navigating across systems. An engineer will need to be very good in understanding the manufacturing processes, but he will also need to be understanding in the future and now in many sectors of the economy the way in which the underlying IT systems operate. So that's something which will be increasingly a challenge for education and training to respond to those needs. It's the same for the marketing profession, where you need also to understand e-commerce opportunities. It's about reaching out to customers who have very varying needs, and we can tailor the offer to the customers. This is where success will be. But it's also about reaching out to new markets. And all these skills which are necessary for that, the soft skills, creating a website, creating an app, using internet, will be very widespread in needs. But there will be also the more specific skills for the digital professions themselves. Coding, programming become more and more in use across sectors. So the second word is sectors. We are not speaking about the ICT sector here. And of course, Google is a front runner. We are speaking about the whole economy. And it's about all sectors adapting to that process of change. I think in terms of the digital learning opportunities, which will be very important for education and training provision, some progress was done already with the MOOCs, and it was, I think, something which was reflected also in what Google is trying to do with its own program, and very successfully so, reaching out to many people. But I think it's also about what we can do as employers in terms of training provision, and the problem is that there are shortages out there. I mean, many of you, I imagine, it was perhaps not really mentioned in the comments, but it's about having access to the right skills. And sometimes education and training provision does not really match those needs. So on the one side, we need to improve the education and training systems. As employers, we need to bring the needs of the companies to those education and training systems. And on the other, as trainers, because companies invest directly in training, we also need to make sure that we are going to adapt. And so in some sectors, you can do that more and more on a digital basis. Perhaps in other sectors, you would need to keep classroom training as well, because it depends on what you do as products and services. But there is a lot of opportunities to explore in that respect. There are new occupations. For example, big data managers, cybersecurity specialists are increasingly in use. There are shortages also for this type of vacancies. And I will conclude perhaps by saying that now we are at an important time. The European Commission is preparing a new skills agenda. And as Business Europe, we are very committed and we cooperate closely with Digital Europe in that context, which is the specific organization for the ICT sector, in order to put much more prominently in the Commission's agenda digital skills. And it includes both how to meet the needs of the companies in terms of the skills needs, but it's also about improving digital learning opportunities and adapting quite in-depth the education and training provision in Europe. So we have a lot to do, but Business Europe is a committed partner for that.
Excellent, thank you very much. And now I'd like to hand the floor to the European Commission. You've just been referenced there about the plans for the new skills agenda. The digital single market is the flagship piece of work that's been put out in this new Commission. What can you tell us about how the Commission's views are in starting to create the growth engine for small businesses and using digital skills?
Thank you. Thank you very much as well for the invitation. It's a huge pleasure and for having this opportunity of being here with you. As it was already said, it's extremely important to hear the view from the side of business and consumers. And from the beginning in the story about the digital single market, this perception has been present in the Commission and will be present in the future, because we are fully consistent with the fact that digital single market discussion for this mandate of the Commission is one of the most crucial for President Juncker, for Vice President Ansip, for Commissioner Biekowska, Commissioner Oettinger, and the whole big team which is working on digital issues. I think as a first reflection I had before coming today at this panel on digital skills, recently my children, 4 and 6 years old, just came and told me, "Oh, Daddy, we have mounted a film for your birthday." And then I looked that from different movies, they just have connected them, they have cut them, and they have presented me a product. Then I looked a little bit ashamed because I still haven't done the film from our holidays in 2015. So I think that in this sense, when I look at them and I'm talking about digital skills, I think we have to take as well the right perception. This is something as well about a sort of DNA that is in us in future generations. It's as well, when we talked about a revolution, like electricity revolution, nobody could foresee as well many of the consequences that will bring. And I think with digital issues, we are today with such a revolution, which is ongoing, which is having a huge impact already in various sectors of our economy, of our social life, that we have to know how to embed. But of course, this is a huge challenge, and we don't know still what will be the challenges in the future. The Commission, of course, has seen some of the problems arising already in 2007 because the gap between jobs that were offered on the digital side and the potential persons that could perform them was still growing. And we ended up with 1 million of jobs that nobody was able to take. On the other hand, we have to know that in Europe we have, in some countries, about 50% of youth unemployment with a range of 25%, let's say, over the whole European Union. So this is a big issue and a big paradox, that in times of such a huge youth unemployment, we are not able to fill the gap of 1 million jobs. But having launched the e-skills strategy for the 21st century, there was as well the issue of the Grand Coalition. Today, the estimations for 2020 are that we are reaching a gap of 800,000. So I think we are at the momentum where we at least reaching 2 million people over the last 7 years, we managed to reverse a little bit the trend. But of course, the key issue now for the Commission is to redefine the balance between demand and supply. And this is what the Commission has been doing all the time. This is something that is as well an important part of the digital single market strategy. This is as well an issue that will be certainly the core part of the announced new agenda for skills that will be launched by the Commission in May this year. But apart of that, of course, we have to look on the broader perspective. The issues of digital economy have been raised here as well. On the business side, we are attaching a lot of importance on barriers, and this is not only about the digital single market, but as an internal market process, because we link as well offline issues to online issues, and the administrative burden is a huge issue that Commissioner Biekowska wants to certainly take care of. It's difficult, it needs to be done case by case. The enforcement policy of the Commission is changing a lot because we planify to do those parts of the economy, and especially linked to services, which are linked in digital issues, point by point, but we want to be very, very serious on that. There is a lot of issues to be done on regarding geo-blocking and the so-called geo-discrimination. There are situations on the markets where the companies cannot sell because there is a national geo-discrimination, there's geo-blocking, you want to buy something in one country, you cannot if you are not offering the right credit card of the bank which is present in this country. So we have to tackle as well a big part of that. There's a big issue as well of portability of rights. If you buy something in the internet, then you are not able to, for instance, watch this in another country. So this is as well a big issue for such a market. And there's a big lack of confidence. And I think on both sides, on consumer who is really afraid to do something because he is afraid that his credit card number will be lost or will be threatened, or another issue on the side of the business side, on the digital contracts. And the Commission is looking very strongly on that, to develop digital contracts, to have an assurance that if you want to sell to someone in another member state, there will be no problem on the legality of this. And this is a serious issue that as well that has been tackled by the digital single market. Third, and the last point that we have to take seriously into consideration is, of course, the whole industrial part, because we are entering in a phase of mass customized production. And people have to know how to deal in a situation of platforms, how to function in the world with the new standards that will have to appear. So having looked at this whole situation of the three parts, so we have having as well digital revolution, as well on the society side, new skills are needed, but as well business has to look as well from the right perspective. Industry as well has to be performed. There's a huge task ahead of this commission, but all those elements have been taken into consideration in the DSM strategy. But as well, at the end, and I think this is my last message for the time being, if we want to address, because all those stories will have tremendous effects on our needs for skills, if business has to meet as well with education. And the idea of cluster has appeared here. If business is cooperating with education, if we are not talking only about shortages of skills, but we are offering as well solutions, the Commission will be as well very helpful to create here the level playing field. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Let me now turn to Catherine Stiley, the Vice Chair of the Parliament Committee with responsibility both for internal market and consumer protection. When we asked the audience what were the challenges, this issue came forward about fear. Yeah. Thomas has been talking about how the Commission has identified some of the challenges and what's coming through, I think, here is this issue of trust. Yeah. Who do you trust in terms of the services? You know, do you put your information online? Let me ask you from the Parliament's point of view, you see the tremendous potential that the online could provide both for individuals, for consumers, for businesses, but you're striking a balance on this issue of building the trust and the opportunities. What can you tell us about the Parliament's activities?
Well, they kind of mirror what we obviously have to react to what the Commission is proposing, and we cannot move without talking about the digital single market and how the single market really is now. The digital single market, you cannot see one without the other, and how we get that balance absolutely is critical. For me, the question about accessibility, I think in two ways. One way about making sure that people have access to superfast broadband. So if I take the example in Scotland, 85% of people will have access to superfast broadband. But what does that mean for the 15% that don't have access? So how do we challenge that? And then the other issue, again, is accessibility is, again, on affordability. So one in five people in Scotland have never used the internet. And that's not just about affordability. It's also about, I think, what Jonathan was saying about fearfulness, about being concerned. This is the issue about trust. So how do we get that right? That to me is something that I think we all kind of struggle with, but I think if we get that right, it could be phenomenally important and successful. And then on the skills agenda, I mean, you go right through from switching on a computer to becoming a software developer, and I think Thomas talked about his kids. Well, my nine-year-old son, Alex, we've started to take him to a Coder Jojo, which is held at the Glasgow Science Centre, and what's been very interesting is he's going in to learn how to code, and I'm kind of hovering there thinking, I'd love to learn to code as well. And there's an issue about how do you get some? I'm 42, I was born in 1973, how do I get somebody like my generation? I thought about setting something up about coding for fun with mums and sons, but I thought, well, I have to be more inclusive than that. But I think it is about having lifelong learning, accessibility, what Google's been doing to try and make that accessible to people, but also across the board that we have got online, you were talking about mass online courses, we have different ways, and I think you were going to talk a little bit about that, because I think that is really exciting. So there's also the school curriculum, how do we make sure coding's a universal language that we can, you know, that's important that our kids and have as a skill set for the future. It can't be seen is exclusively, you know, as one corner's computer science, it has to be across the board. So say you're studying for your, I don't know, your A-level English, and as part of that you've got to do a Jane Austen app. It's a way to try and say that computer science shouldn't be just in a little box. It's across the board, and this links into the fact that digital skills are across the board. It's not just about learning that to become a computer scientist. 90% of jobs across the European Union require digital skills, and I think we have actually a moral responsibility across the European Union to make sure our citizens have that skill set for the future. And if I just conclude about the mindset issue, I mean, my mother said she would never touch a computer. Now I can't get my mum off a smartphone, and so it's become this kind of this you know, I heard a statistic at the Mobile World Congress that mobile traffic grew between the last quarter in last year to in 2014, quarter four 2014 to quarter four 2015 by 65%. 65% growth in mobile traffic. That is an incredible thing. And if you think that 3.2 billion people are using the internet and there are 14 billion network devices, the potential is huge. And we're at this really important moment. And if we get it right, I just think that we will be, you know, proud of the contribution we made made, not just to the European economy, but preparing our citizens for the future. Thank you, Tamsin.
Excellent, thank you. And now I'm going to give an opportunity to our two entrepreneurs to share some of their experiences. Perhaps I'll start with you, Tano, because the panel talked a little bit about education and the role of digital skills in education. If I've understood correctly, this is your core business.
Of course.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your business and then how digital skills helped you grow it and take it forward?
Well, the story I come to tell you today is the story of a dream. It's the dream of my life becoming who I want to be and working in what I want to work. I was a kid born and raised in Spain. I had to move to the U.S. in order to find an education and to find a better life, to find things I wasn't finding in Spain. When I came back, people thought I was crazy. This was 2012, and Spain wasn't the best economy in the world. It's not even today, but I mean, 2012 was slightly worse. And when I came back, I thought, first thing, how could I help other people like me get the same opportunity? Because if I got to give one advice as a businessman, who I am today, I would say try to find the problems in your society. And your society is not Europe, it's not a parliament, it's not a governor. Your society is your family, your friends, the people that share your environment every day. And if you focus on helping that people, as I wanted to do, the day will come when they have to pay you and they become your customers. And they are happy people. They will give you their money happily. You won't have to be selling nothing. You won't have to be telling interesting stories about marketing. Marketing is never useful if you don't have a person in front of it. So the communication between people and the ways that you, as entrepreneurs, can help the people around you is the best business in the world. The way I found it was founded on my story of success, of going out of leaving my family behind, leaving my friends behind, and coming back. So what I wanted to do was create a platform that I created now where I could put all the offers of the universities worldwide that are looking for talent, that were looking for me and I didn't know it. And I was at my house just losing time, like a lot of young people are doing right now in Europe. These people want an opportunity. They really want it. And this opportunity is not going to come from governments and it's not going to come from corporations, except for some like Google and these kind of facts, but this is not the normal thing. The normal thing is that you have to go by yourself, you have to go outside and look for a better future for yourself, because you have to do it for yourself. No one's going to give it to you. So I wanted to build a digital platform, and so I thought I needed digital skills. And I thought this because I wanted, as I said before, to fulfill a space that other companies were taking advantage of just with the idea of money in their brains, just the idea of taking an opportunity and making it into money. That's all. That doesn't help anymore. No one wants to give their money for free. You have to propose a fantasy. You have to propose an illusion. You have to talk about your business with the brightness of your eyes. You have to feel it from the heart. The old methods of selling products like marketing or advertising are old. You have to forget about them. You have to be your business. People want to see you in the eye and know that you are trying to help them. If you are trying to sell them something, they're not going to buy it. You have to try and help them. So that's why I attended the courses, and I wanted to build a team of people that thought like I do, that think like I do, and I had the opportunity in these courses to spend time with them before hiring them, because I think also another old method of the interviews and the job interviews and this kind of stuff, I think is completely outdated. Now it's all about communication. Now there's not the old hierarchy of the companies is changing. Now everything is more horizontal, and people want to have all this communication going on all the time. So that's what I do with my employees, and that's what I found in the Google courses. I found a meeting point for people like me to express themselves, find people like their own, and hire people that can work for them. And we all have the same mindset. And when we're all positive and trying to help one another, business grow by themselves.
Excellent, thank you. Let me now pass to your colleague, Maeve, who's also an entrepreneur and also bridging the online and the real world. You also have a story to tell us about how you have developed and grown your business.
Yes, so L'Exception is a select store of French designers. We are selling 400 brands, from the little one that you can find in Le Marais to Carven, Kenzo. And we started 4 years ago with my partner selling all our products from my apartment. And now we have more than 200 orders per day. So, and I didn't learn anything in classes. All I learned about digital, I learned it by myself on MOOC and on some operation like Google is doing. What is the challenge, I think, when I hear everybody here, is that we need to make the young generation understand that education is in their hand. It's not... All the tools are here. We just need to... If we want to learn something, we go on the internet and we find the answer. We spend some time, hours, night, and we can do it. And in France, and in maybe in Europe, I think so, we have a negative mindset, a fear of failing, and I think the biggest challenge is to change that. Voilà.
Okay. Excellent. So our panel has given us some insight into what the institutions are doing, how the business sector sees itself, and here we have some wonderful insight from the two businesses where we heard it's about overcoming fear and understanding that people were out there looking for you, but you didn't know it. So the digital allows those connections to be made. And even if you start small in an apartment, you know, you can grow quickly.
Exactly.
With the motivation to learn, and if there are structures out there to support you. So we've had some input here from the panel. Let's open it up now to the room. I know we have other small businesses here who've benefited from the skills training. We have some media, we have policymakers, we have the usual Brussels crowd. and that's no insult. I'm part of the Brussels crowd. So this is the big challenge. We heard earlier that, and I think it was you, Thomas, who said that we had the forecast 7 years ago that we would have, by 2020, 900,000 jobs that we couldn't fill because we didn't have the skills. And a few years into this process, that forecast has now moved to 800,000. So we're getting there, but progress seems slow. How do we speed this up and make it happen? We heard that when Google started their training, the thirst, the demand for it was so much they fulfilled the pledge in 6 months. And they're rolling it out. There's an interest out there. So there's a need to accelerate. What do we need to do next? And by the way, this links me to the second piece of audience participation, which is I'm going to ask you to take out your blue cards. Because we hope that you've been inspired by what you've heard. And what we want you to do is to think about what you could do to help businesses enter the online environment and grow their businesses to become the growth engine for Europe in whatever area you're working in. And as I said, we all work in different sectors in this room. Take a minute to think about it and write it down. And by the way, nobody leaves this room without giving me a blue card. There's no free lunch in Brussels. There's no exit from this room without a blue card. So think about what you could do to help accelerate the change that we've heard about, and we've heard about the ideas, the new businesses that are out there. There's an interest in the skills and making it happen. Catherine said to us, if we get it right, this is the window of opportunity. If we get it right, it could be tremendous. And I may come back to you, to Catherine, to say, how will we know when we're getting it right? We're in this moment of change. We've heard from Tano, old business models are out. No job interviews in the future, by the way. Marketing is dead. We've got new things happening. So how will we know? I'll come to you. And also from the Commission. It's an institution that works like an elephant, a little bit slowly. The change that we're talking about is so fast. Do you think you're able to keep pace with this to allow the acceleration to happen? So, Catherine, do you maybe want to answer that question?
Well, that's a big question, Tamsin, because at the moment we are in the early stages of trying. I guess at the moment, I mean, we've got certain things in the committee and portability and the contracts issues and things like that we are trying to now grapple with. And we will see. I mean, I deal with a lot on copyright, and that's a big issue. And if we can get, for example, the text and data mining exemption that we have actually in the UK on non-commercial purposes actually extended across the European Union, the potential for that in the European research space is absolutely phenomenal. So you may not be thinking about that in the audience, that that's a bit, but actually in terms of innovation, creation of, of, of new ideas, new work, new jobs, that could actually have something really important. So, I mean, the proof will be in the eating, won't it? It will be as you see it rolled out, the legislation actually coming into being and creating that single market, which we want to see, the potential of 500 million people crossing 28 countries. And I have to say, I do hope the United Kingdom remains part of the European Union to play our part in that, because I think it was someone mentioned about how London had, you know, we had meetings last week about fintech and what was happening in financial services, the transition that's happening. That's really an exciting space. But across the board, you've got a company in Glasgow like Swarm Online that are delivering smart metering through for E.ON, and just somebody mentioned Sky Scanner as well, which is based in Edinburgh. Great companies that are doing great work. And I think that the digital single market will be a tool in the toolbox to ensure that we can just grow and benefit from the potential we have of being part of the European Union.
Excellent. Thomas, did you want to answer anything about, you know, how the Commission can speed its things up, its initiatives up, to help with the accelerating pace of change, both of technology and society?
Yes, that's the crucial problem. And when we look at least for one particular issue, which is so popular recently, collaborative sharing economy, where in some member states there are big problems from the social side, from the tax side, and there is a very strong incentive to legislate and to create new legislation. And the Commission has been asked, why you are not legislating this particular field? You need to legislate. You need to block. Then the Commission has to say, no, I mean, it's possible. How can we say that next year we will not have a new business model emerging in the digital era? You cannot predict that. That's why, which is important, is to limit the legislation to the minimum today and to really look at those points that have an influence at one point of the value chains and which is still a grey zone, and to look on this perspective. But when we have this kind of situation of business models emerging from the digital era, we have to rather see how the legislation we have now can serve the best in order to be interpreted for business to grow. And this is the approach that this Commission has taken, and especially this will be the approach taken in this particular field, because this is something which the Commission wants to give guidance in June this year.
Excellent. Okay. Now let me turn to you, the audience. Could we have the lights up in the room? Let's see your blue cards in the air, please. Blue cards up. Remember, I said nobody leave this room unless we get a blue card from you. Excellent. So, in theory, we've got a lot of individual pledges of information, things that you are going to be able to do to help people grow their businesses online. So I'm going to invite some people to share, and you're also welcome to put questions to the panel if you want. And just before you do it, if you are a small business who came to Brussels to share your ideas, please stand up so we can see where you are. Because I'm going to invite people afterwards to network outside. The small businesses, stand up. Let's see where you are. Okay. There's a strong presence in this room of the entrepreneurs, the people who have used the digital businesses and grown. These are the people with the ideas. This is the growth engine that we were looking for. So do take the opportunity to meet them and see the diversity that we've got here. So questions to the panel, or share what's on your blue card. What are you going to do next to help make this happen? Don't be shy. We need to give you a microphone, thank you.
Yeah, my question was just following on from Manon there, which you mentioned about copyright, yeah. and going into the greater sort of online, you know, one market, digital market. There are times where it seems that big business are working, not Google, I would add, but are working to counter that, you know, to keep it small. I mean, an obvious example is going to be would be Sky, for example. You know, where they actively prosecute if you are accessing Sky services. I mean, there's a couple of famous cases where people are watching Premiership football from Greece in the UK, and Sky take them to court fast as you like, because it can't, you know, even though they're purchasing on an online digital marketplace, they're not able to broadcast it in the UK. So while sort of young small businesses and entrepreneurs, and we're all here to promote and to encourage a digital single market, big business, which carries an awful lot of influence as well, is very clearly working against that.
Mm. I think on the copy.
What's the commission doing about it?
So, I'll help Thomas as well, because it's a bit unfair asking you about copyright, because that isn't really your. But so we're going to have a new. We're trying to make copyright rules easier across the 28 member states. At the moment, you've basically got 28 different sets of copyright rules, although it goes back to something we agreed upon in 2001, which now, you know, 2001 was a long time from where we are in 2016. So what we're trying to do is update the copyright rules, and part of it is trying to make sure that we reflect over the digital reality. So the start of some of that is what you were talking about in the geo-blocking issue. We've got at the moment the issues around portability of content. So what this is if you are going on holiday to Spain, for example, and you want to, say, watch something that you've already paid for and you want to watch when you're in Spain, so why are you not allowed to do that in some cases? And to make sure that when people are buying something in one place, you can take it with you. So that seems quite straightforward, but obviously there's some complexities there that we're trying to get right. So that's one tiny part of the bigger picture in the digital lingual market, but I think that by working together, by trying to create rules that we agree to, I think there is benefit there, and I'm confident in the portability aspect that will hopefully. I mean, we've already got a rapporteur agreed upon, I believe, and we'll move forward in the next little while. But if there's anything on copyright, please keep in touch with me, because I think that as we move forward and the copyright strategy becomes a copyright proposals, when we actually start to look at the law, then we do need to have that conversation with SMEs and with other startup community.
Thank you. Did you want to add something? If not, I'm actually going to come to Maxime to say, you've raised an interesting point here, which is the growth and flourishing of small businesses. To what extent is there space? You know, in a forest, the tall trees take all the light, and it makes it hard for new plants to come forward. We want to encourage small business and entrepreneurs, but we have some big players in the market. How do the larger companies, the existing multinationals, see these upstarts? These disruptive new business models being brought forward by entrepreneurs, are they supportive, or are they looking to use legislation and other frameworks to block things?
As I said, I think we really see the digital transformation, which is now ongoing, as an opportunity. So, I mean, it's an opportunity for big and small. And we should try to tap that potential for big and small. And of course, there it was mentioned, the collaborative, the sharing economy is creating a lot of question marks with opportunities as well. And we will need to tackle these issues. I think the European Union has an important coordinating role in all this. But we should also acknowledge that for a big part of the issues relating, for example, to taxation, social protection, skills, the competencies are mainly in the member states. So it will be very much for the countries in question and social partners in those countries where they have a role to play, to organize, to think about what it means and how to organize things in a way which is effective for all. But I'd like perhaps to add two examples in our discussions. One is us as Business Europe, we are really trying to make the business case for apprenticeships. And apprenticeships have the potential in improving the match between the skills needs of enterprises and what the training is about. And we are doing now a project where we are getting to the conclusions. I think we should try to deconstruct myths because it is seen that it is mainly for industrial sectors of the economy, that it would be a second-class training path for the young people going through apprenticeships, when in fact more and more sectors of the economy could use it, including the digital sector, for example, where I know that there is a pilot in the making to try to improve it. And it's also the best way for people to get access to good jobs, sometimes linked to entrepreneurship. And all our discussions should also be linked to entrepreneurship education early in life. And the second example is Paris. There is an initiative called 42. It's a school. The young people go there. They don't need to have any qualifications base. They don't need to have baccalaureate in France, for example. They are just based on IQ tests, and they get there to solve problems. There is a mix of cooperation and competition between the students, and after the training program, I think they have a high level of employability because all the problem solving is based on real company situation. This is a good example of how to go for the future.
Excellent. Thank you. I had potential input from the floor. Yes.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So, I'm Nicholas from Coca-Cola. As an example of a business that heavily relies on small and smallest enterprises, of course we supply our beverages to big supermarkets, but also to the small and small shops around the corner. And actually that makes a huge part of the workflow and the workforce that is part of our supply chain. So for one job in Coke, we have 12 jobs created in that supply chain, and that is to a huge extent small and smallest companies. And actually, we have a global program to build entrepreneurship across the globe and to build skills, and including digital skills, for smallest businesses to develop using our beverages as a sales platform, but to do more than that. And this is a very successful model across the world, and I would totally contradict any statement that says big against small. On the contrary, big with small and small with big, that works, and that's the future for us.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. I'm going to give you the very last word.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I would just want to add one thing that has been going around my mind through all these days and talking with people that run small businesses like me. Why do we have to play like with the same rules? I mean, when you're a little kid, you're not expected to do maths. You're not expected to have a bank account. You're a kid. So when you're a small business, why do you have to know all these laws? And every time you jump a law, you get, you know, like this axe on your head, and you get like all the system on you. I mean, we should give like a flexible model to businesses that want to innovate, want to give more to society than not just bare money, because I don't think that we have to get the same access, for example, to credit or the same taxes or the same hiring methods for a company that wants to buy a house for two, sell it for three and make a profit, than a company that wants to focus on educating people, helping young people, helping parts of society that can be with not so many favors. So why don't we create a scenario and we start dividing companies for what they are and what they give back to society and humanity as itself, and start helping that people, not only the people that are here for the money. I can understand that. I mean,
just... Okay, thank you for that. That we should look at the broader aspects of the value for society that companies, and particularly small companies, create, and then see if there couldn't be some softer rules or simple rules to give them the space to grow. I think this is a very excellent final message for us from this panel. There's the ideas out there.
For example, I have an example.
Yes.
We are 15 in our company, and there is a regulation in France that doesn't allow us to take more than 3 interns. And we have thousands of students that are asking, can we come and learn with you? And we cannot, because the regulation is not right. So, I don't know.
You've come to the right place. The Brussels bubble is exactly where we need to hear this kind of information. Because, you know, we need to get it right, as Catherine said. And if we can, then all that energy and enthusiasm and potential that exists out there can actually be fulfilled. So on your behalf, I would like to say a warm thank you to all our panelists and to our small businesses who came to Brussels to showcase their talent and what they're doing. Please stay, have a look outside of the exhibition space, talk to them, hear about what they're doing, and be inspired about how Europe can remain competitive for the 21st century. Thank you for your time. Please hand in your blue cards before you leave. As I said, that is your ticket out of the room. Thank you, and see you again maybe in a year to update.